Who's up for talking nonsense?
Who's up for talking nonsense?
I'm the American Jezebel.
It's the Grecian Rapidian.
And here we are, talking some more nonsense.
Yep, at nonsense headquarters.
Yes,
we're in the studio.
Old Nonsense HQ.
Yep, sitting Joe Rogan style, orthogonal. Blowing up.
Yeah, I'm trying to, it's like a little blip, so you just throw that out there and then it just dies, you know? It's like somebody trying to light a very wet firecracker
really? Every
time you try to use orthogonal.
Like
that's just what I see there, yeah. You are naked and afraid out in the woods, just desperately rubbing that flint and trying to get that fire going, and it just sparks and dies. Sparks
well, if
and
we're
going
to just continue the metaphor,
yeah.
Like, I've started a lot of things before. I've got a lot of words to go. I'm an expert at this. And then we get out in the woods.
Yeah.
I spent 4 days without water or food trying to start a fire, and I can't. And my partner's really mad at me.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. You're saying that's what this is?
I think you are the overconfident, naked, and afraid person. Yep. Yep. Yes.
Who then taps out at day six.
Maybe even earlier.
Because I got bit by a spider.
Maybe I would.
You know who you are.
36 hours. Not even day six. Didn't even make it the second night.
Okay, so honestly,
we're not trying to rag on. I'm not saying I want to go out and do that.
I wouldn't make it for the first night.
Yeah.
As soon as the sun went down,
I don't want to
be
bit by a spider in my own house. I'm not going to get one bit by one in the Colombian jungle.
I know.
Oh,
I know. I can't sleep alone anymore. I'm so scared.
No, thank you.
So anyway, orthogonal's going to catch on.
I think it is the flint of a wet jungle in Colombia.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Bad news. Bad news, man. anyway, here we are back at a Talking Nonsense HQ,
yeah.
Back in the studio to talk about another movie.
Episode
19.
19. This is almost breaking into the 20s. Next episode's going to be 20.
I know. We can see our year anniversary on the horizon.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be a big one, guys. We're excited.
What are we going to do on our year anniversary?
We can't tell you yet.
Oh, it's going to be big, though.
It's going to be a good surprise. Speaking of, we're in a new trilogy as well.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of newness, we're in our new trilogy. We're in our Elder Trilogy.
Elder Trilogy.
Yes.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay,
dipping
we're
our
starting
toes
off.
Into the world of, yes, in this case, the rural Canada. The best place to spend time with elders is in rural Canada.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Who doesn't love
elder
Marilla?
Canadians.
And yeah.
Yeah.
Old Marilla and Matthew down at Green Gables. This is a shout out for very specific people who are big Anne of Green Gables fans.
Okay.
Mrs. Rachel Lynde. Yeah. All the gossipy old Canadians. Yeah.
And so the movie we watched was
Still Mine.
Still Mine.
Yeah. But before we get into the movie, I'm feeling kind of hungry before we talk.
Well,
do you have any snacks you think I should eat?
I'm not feeling hungry because every day I'm eating my vegetarian breakfast, which is the former future sponsor I think we had, Vega Shakes.
We did, yes.
Yep. And the other future sponsor we have, which is RX Bars. Although RX Bars does use eggs.
Okay, so
it's not vegan.
It's not vegan, but it is vegetarian.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have a Vega shake and an RX bar every morning for breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
So before this episode, I had the RX bar, which are delicious. As they say on the package, 3 egg whites, 6 almonds, 4 cashews, 2 dates, and no BS. That's what I had.
No BS.
No, I don't want BS in my breakfast.
Yes.
I recently got a promotion at my pretend job.
Oh, your pretend job.
Yeah, because this is my real job.
Oh, right. Mm.
My side hustle.
Your 40-hour-a-week side hustle.
Correct. No, 38.25 hour-a-week side hustle.
Sure. You got a promotion there.
I got a promotion, mm-hmm. And I'm the shift supervisor.
Mm.
Yeah, and so I was telling my mom.
Does that come with a sweet bonus?
Well, that's too complicated. It's going to take an hour to explain what my raisin bonus were. But so we won't go into that because it's way above ACT tutoring levels. I mean, absolutely. This is like the final question.
This is Calc BC. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But so I went to see my mom yesterday and I said, hey, mom, who is still mine, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. She is right in that zone, right? And so I went to see her and I said, hey, mom, you know, and so then she talked for quite a while about things that are going on in her life, her shingles, her teeth that are falling out, her ponytail that's driving her crazy, mm-hmm. and on and on. I'm not going to go into other graphic details that she talked about, including constipation that she talked about for quite a while.
I don't know what's worse, constipation or when she's trying to get you to, like, pick stuff out of her teeth.
There's a few things there.
Yeah,
not good.
Yeah.
But I said, so, hey, enough about you. Let's talk about me. I got a promotion at work. I'm the new shift supervisor. And she said, shit supervisor. And so I'm thinking she was thinking there might be some BS in my breakfast.
Hey, or if not in yours, you're responsible for making sure there is some in everybody else's, supervising the BS in everybody else's breakfast.
Well, I have been cleaning the public bathroom. We have no public restrooms that we let people use, and then the hopheads come in and just destroy them. The Yankee bathroom, right? The bathroom near Yankee Stadium in New York City, they just destroy it. So I guess I am, in some ways, the shit supervisor.
She is not wrong. Yeah.
But I'm just saying, if those readers out there that are wondering why we can't get any sponsors.
This is why. Somehow we got to this through our fake ad for RX Bars.
So thank you, RX Bars, for sponsoring this despite this really bad copy line.
This is why they chose Ice Cube, not us, to be the face of... No, it's Ice Tea.
Oh.
It's Ice Tea. Who's the face of RX Bars?
We get our ices mixed up. Vanilla ice,
I
Ice
do.
Tea.
Yeah.
Ice
How could it? Yes. Vanilla Ice is not out of the poll to be an RX, the face of RX anymore. He's the whatever the knockoff of it is. Yeah, Vanilla Ice is the face of RX.
Yeah, I think
one.
There's some BS in those bars.
Definitely.
Okay, no hate mail from the Vanilla Icers.
Oh, no.
We are not starting a Twitter
feud. Not
the
new Jim Carrey's.
He is not. Speaking of Jim Carrey, what's up with our guy this week?
Are we doing our traditional
recurring segment?
Traditional Jim Carrey check-in?
Yeah.
Do you have a Google alert set, a Google News alert set for Jim Carrey now?
Oh, I should.
Oh, man.
So what do you got for me in terms of Jim Carrey this
week?
Well,
it's been kind of quiet. I mean, it's hard to reach the heights of his Twitter feud with Mussolini's granddaughter or whatever that was. No, Jim Carrey, he's just actually out there doing good work. He's out there doing good work this week, supporting Ariana Grande, which I think we should all be doing. I'm not afraid to say it. We should all be supporting Ariana Grande.
All right, just to show how magnanimous we are here at Talking Nonsense,
mm-hmm.
that we're not feuding with anybody. No. I will follow you, Jim Carrey, in your march towards supporting Ariana Grande.
We fully support your support.
We're behind you.
Of Ariana
we
Grande.
We support you in your support.
We will block those lemons that people try to throw at her at Coachella. Guys, PSA, don't throw lemons at Ariana Grande.
Anybody,
if she's performing at Coachella, you can throw lemons at some people.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, we won't get into it right now, but
because we'll start
I think
a new
that
Twitter
there's a scale,
if I was
a
to
scale
say, go,
of acceptability in terms of who you can throw lemons
at.
Yeah,
if I was to say throw them at Dave Matthews, go ahead. It might set some people
that
off.
That is another very random person to start getting into a feud with. Also, like, very relevant in what... We'll come back to Dave Matthews later on, though, in the podcast, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, didn't he show up in one of our earlier ones? Oh, I forgot. Yes,
he
that
will
one.
Show up. Yes.
Oh, okay.
We can talk Dave Matthews. We can talk Justin Timberlake circa bringing sexy back.
Oh, that was a little foreshadowing.
It was a little foreshadowing there. But I just want to put it on the record. Don't throw them at Ariana Grande, especially at Coachella.
No.
I think that it's not a stretch to say you can both love Beyonce and not throw lemons at Ariana Grande.
Yeah, I think
Those are not mutually exclusive things, and it's not productive. She's had a tough time. We should support her.
Also, she's just ridiculously talented and a cutie pie.
Yes.
And with a broken picker, so.
She is, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Give her some slack.
Yeah, seriously.
Okay.
Hope that pig is okay. So that's what Jim Carrey is up to. He's supporting Ariana Grande's support.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So we're on board.
Yeah. Yep. Move along. Agree to disagree?
We had no agree to disagree this week.
You know why?
Because we didn't go after Jim Carrey?
No. Because we're crushing it.
Yeah. Because we made, again, perfect analysis.
Mm-hmm. Flawless.
Mm-hmm. Everybody was just sitting there crying over how great our analysis of The Last Picture Show was. We've reached like podcasting nirvana. No one can disagree with us on anything.
No, we are the Buddhas. We're
just like this perfect equilibrium. We are the Buddhas of podcasting. Yeah, that can go on the billboards that they make about us.
Bodhisattvas. We'll be bodhisattvas.
There we go. Yes, exactly.
Because we'll come back every couple of weeks to help you guys out.
So yeah,
we're more bodhisattva.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, we're in a helping mode in that way.
Correct.
We want everyone else to get on our levels. We do.
We do.
But we're not attached to the outcome either.
We're not?
No.
No.
And no agree to disagree this week. But we did have a listener suggestion. We've been soliciting listener suggestions for our movies.
We've had a few, haven't we?
We have had a few, yes. So, again, I want to throw it out there again. You can make a list. We are doing a listener suggestion episode. It's coming up in after we wrap up this trilogy. We're doing a listener suggestion episode. So, email us at americandrezebel.greasyrapidian@gmail.com. to tell us your suggestions, which is where we've gotten some of our current suggestions that we have. You can also tweet at us at American Jezebel. So Bruce Almighty Fan 420, tweet at us with your suggestions. I can't remember who our other followers are. Well, we do have the maybe not anymore, but the sapiosexualized on there as well. So you can tweet at us at American Jezebel, or you can send us a message, slide into our DMs on Instagram at American_Jezebel. Let us know what you think we should watch. What is a liminal space movie that we have been missing that needs to be added to this canon? But we've had a couple of suggestions. So do you want to tell us what one of the suggestions was?
Well, I think we've had a suggestion, three suggestions, two of which I've seen and one of which I have not.
And I have seen none of them. So yeah. It's exciting.
Mm. So one of the suggestions was Tully.
Yes, not
Sully,
the Tom Hanks film Sully. Although that was maybe a liminal space. He really had to transform and step up to the plate to land that plane in the Hudson.
That's right. You're stretching. You're going
We're not
hard.
Watching Sully.
We're not watching Sully.
It is not Sully, but it was recommended that we watch Tully, huh. Which I have not seen, but I know quite a bit about. So.
I know nothing about it.
So we,
I thought it was Sully.
Suggested you to think it was Sully. So that tells you exactly what you need to know. I think if you we do watch that one and you do and you make some predictions, I think she's going to be flying a plane into the Hudson. And we also had a suggestion. The movie King of Hearts was suggested for us,
which I have also not seen. Many years since I've seen it, but
I assume it involves high-stakes poker games. Oh. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't even know what the King of Hearts would be a reference to.
Yeah.
And then our last suggestion so far, going back into our coming of age, which we've really left behind right now, is 3 o'clock High.
I know, and I feel bad that we didn't do this one earlier. This is one I should have brought out because it may be one of my favorite high school teen movies.
Wow. Again, one I have never even heard of until that we got this suggestion.
I know. I would put this closely behind To All the Boys and Easy A.
Really? Wow.
It would be in the top five.
Wow. It almost
it's
ranks
a sleeper
into
too.
Possibly our canon. It is. I've never heard of it before.
I've never heard anybody talk about it. I think I watched it on
when
cable.
When did it come out?
Like when I was in my 20s maybe.
Okay.
So 10 years ago.
Yeah. Last year, 2017. yes. Okay. Well, so we have three suggestions so far, yeah. But there's still a little time for you to get your suggestion of what you think we need to watch mm-hmm. in. Again, email us, AmericanJezebel.GreaseyRapidian@gmail.com, or tweet at us or DM us on Instagram, comment on our Instagram post, whatever you want, to tell us what you think we need to watch, what needs to go into the canon.
Okay.
And we'll make a decision sometime soon.
Yeah.
We got a little time. So you get those suggestions
in. You got about a month to get them in.
You got a month. Get them in.
Yep.
And then we'll figure out how we're going to decide what movie we want to watch.
Very nice.
We're excited about our options, though.
Super excited. And so this week we watched Still Mine.
We did watch Still Mine.
Which I had seen.
Yes. And this is a film that I had not seen.
Which brings us to?
Some people were like, what? And I was like, oh, what?
Amber Ruffin. Oh my God. She's not devoting the time she needs to Amber Says What.
Or to our project, our side hustle with her, the Amber Ruffin alarm clock.
Correct. We're really disappointed. And she's not calling us either.
Yeah.
Shockingly. As is Joel Courtney.
Joel Courtney.
We will not give up on you, Joel.
I know you're
so
probably shooting. I'm heartbroken I even have to say this. You're probably shooting.
Don't. No. We're not even.
Number two.
Do not create the mind.
We'll just call it number
form.
Two.
Speaking of both. Shit supervisor.
The shit supervisor.
I'm surprised they didn't call me to do some supervising on that project. Because
I know.
It is going to be shit.
And I'm surprised they did not call us to be consultants on the film. I would have said no, because I don't want my name associated with that in any way. But I'm surprised they didn't call us, given that we are some of the foremost experts on shit supervising and that movie, which is a perfect combination of things.
Oh, I'm just so happy that I already have a trail name.
You do have a new trail name. It's on par with some of the ones that people are really mad about when they get to trail names. So your alternate trail name may be the shit supervisor. Thanks to, we won't say her name, your mother for giving you a really good trail name.
An accidental trail name.
Yeah. But yeah, so I had not seen this film, Still Mine, so I made some predictions about it. All right, so we're watching Still Mine. I have no idea what happens in this movie. What I do know, okay, so I do know that this movie is about, I think his name is James Cromwell, the actor. I don't know. He seems extremely British and like very upright. And he is building a house for his wife. So I think it's going to be a very like beautiful and like contemplative sort of like meditative film. And he's like, it's going to be shot very beautifully in like the Canadian wilderness, like lots of sun dappled things as he's building this house for her. And then I think, except that I think at the end, there's going to be a big twist because he is going to die and she's going to have to deal with his death. That's my predictions for this movie.
Nailed it.
Perfect predictions.
All right, let's wrap up this episode because that's all there is to say.
I mean, I said everything that needed to happen. I was partially right, but I thought that there would be more drama in this movie than it was. I didn't realize it was based on a true story, so therefore wouldn't have like the twists, which I guess also goes into what I watched before, because I was ready for there to be lots of twists and turns and big reveals and things like that.
But you were right about the pastoral scenes with orchestral music playing.
Yeah, there was lots of like running hands over handmade wood things and like
Mumford and Sons playing in the background.
Yeah, yeah. If you know it's a pastoral movie if Mumford and Sons plays over a funeral scene. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's really some peak 2012 filmmaking. Mm-hmm. Even though I did an amazing job of predicting what was going to happen in the movie, I'm still going to read you the description.
Okay.
If we had looked up this movie, this is the description you'd hear for this film. A farmer fights back when local authorities hamper his efforts to build a cottage for his dementia-stricken wife.
Pretty much it.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it on the nose.
I did not realize there would be so much low-level building code drama in this movie. I did not anticipate that a lot of the, about half of the tension comes from building code violations and stamped lumber issues. I did not predict that in my predictions about the movie. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and I have very little experience with this, so I had to ask you about it a little bit as we were watching the movie, about the veracity of mm-hmm. this type of conflict happening.
And what did you learn?
That this could actually really happen.
Not only could, it does.
Yes. And so I thought that was an interesting part of it, because as a non-builder myself, watching this movie, I just felt like the sort of antagonist of the movie, they're kind of dual antagonists of the movie, one of them being dementia, one of them being this building inspector who is like the representative of bureaucracy, and that he was just like an unrepentant asshole the whole time, and he just had like no redeeming qualities at all, and so he was a bit of like a cardboard cutout of a bureaucrat. But it seems like, from your experience, maybe you can speak to this a little bit more, that that actually might be the case, that somebody would be like that, because I just found him to be just like a blank slate of just he wasn't going to budge an inch. He was just an asshole to be an asshole, kind of backed up by, well, these are the rules.
Yes. And so Dr. No Nonsense, whenever I'm working on a building project that is permitted and I call for an inspection, I can hardly sleep the night before.
Mm-hmm.
And she always says, why are you so worried about it? And this is exactly why. It's like a crapshoot.
Hmm.
You don't know who the inspector is until they show up. And so when you watch the movie, you go, why would that guy be just such a jerk?
Yeah, that's what I was asking myself the whole movie.
Yeah, and so you don't know. And so that it kind of is, because your relationship with the inspector mm-hmm. is very brief.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you might interact with him for a half an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not chitting and chatting. You have no sense of who they are. They are truly a two-dimensional person who comes in. And if you get them on a bad day, you get them on a bad day. And they take it out on you.
And nothing you can do will
there
be good enough.
Nothing you can do.
Huh.
And so that it was pretty true.
Yeah.
It was a pretty accurate depiction of what an experience with the building department can be. And so I think that a lot of people have antagonistic relationships with inspectors. I've heard stories of people who deal with them on a frequent basis, because I don't.
Mm-hmm.
I aim
right,
frequent.
If you're a professional
yeah.
and you have to do it all the time.
And it's a pissing contest from the minute you meet. That's a lot of how they live. And so I have sympathy for them as well, because they're going into situations where people are just trying to get on top of them right away. And so they're coming in trying to get on top. And that's their whole way of life. We can talk about the relationship that police have with our communities. But if your whole relationship with people is they're thieves, they're criminals, they're crooks, you start to see all people as mm-hmm. criminals, crooks, and thieves.
Mm-hmm.
And then that kind of taints how you interact with people.
Yeah.
And if your whole interaction with people is that you're going in to inspect because you want it done right, but the whole interaction is that people are trying to get over on you and they're trying to bully you and, you know, get you to just sign off because they got to get this project done, then you just see everybody is trying to get over on you. And then you come in saying, you're not getting over on me. And then that becomes your whole relationship with people.
Yeah, I think that really is a good illustration of that, the kind of that, how those, the ways that you're doing those things then shapes how you view a lot of people and how you view all the interactions that you have then. Yeah, absolutely.
It sets up a dynamic.
And a very hyper-masculine world, too.
Yeah. Both of them,
yeah.
Policing.
Yeah,
or
absolutely.
Codes. I mean,
yeah.
We could just go on and on.
Well, and they say that's the same thing of like people who own guns then think a lot more people have guns, and I'm sure that then applies to the police as well, that they're used to having guns and seeing guns around, so then they assume that people have weapons a lot of times when they actually don't, because it colors your worldview, because it's the experience that you have. So I just, because I wanted to add a little nuance to that portrayal of the inspector, just because if you come into the movie like me, not knowing anything about it, you go, wow, he really is like such a two-dimensional kind of villain in this movie that we just see nothing. But it's kind of true, because we're seeing it just from the perspective of Craig.
G. Craig Morrison,
which I think is his actual name, the real man's name. I don't think they changed
skipping
it.
Skipping ahead to some facts.
Yes. Yeah, and so you just see it from his perspective, so you see him as this, you see the relationship only through that lens, and you really don't see, like, oh, here's the inspector at home thinking about these things. You don't get to hear his perspective, really, aside from, it's the law, you have to do it, right?
Right.
So I thought that could be seen as a maybe a potential weakness of the movie is that he's just such a faceless bureaucrat. And then they kind of couch it in this larger sort of commentary on all of the regulations that we have now. And are those unnecessary? And in kind of in the context of the movie, it makes them seem that way. And I think a lot of them could be seen that way, right? If you're a small time farmer, why would you spend all this money to get a refrigerated truck just so you can sell strawberries? Or why should you, if you know your lumber is good? It's kind of like a Ron Swanson versus Leslie Knope functions of government argument happening in the movie as well. So I think, yeah, it's it can be kind of read that way. I think that this is a commentary on we're being overregulated and what happened to like the freedom to build something on your own land if it's land that you own, or your freedom to harvest your own strawberries, et cetera, et cetera.
Even as we were watching him build his house, I was like, yeah, that's how you would have built a house in 1904. You know, he was missing a lot of typical structural supports that happen now that they wouldn't have done back in the day. So it seemed like he was building the house kind of correctly, like maybe his father from 1904 would have taught him to build a house. But it's not how you would build a house today, you know. And maybe, again, it goes to the lumber, like he has, you know, old growth trees that have a tighter grain and they're stronger compression, etc. And so we changed our building because now we have fast growing pine that doesn't have the same strength,
right?
You know, and so we've changed how we, you know, support. And so all those things can be true, but in terms of the building inspector, he can't say, oh, that's okay,
right?
He has to say, these are how, this is how we build now.
Exactly. Yeah. So I do think that there, in some ways, you are seeing a little bit of that in the context of the movie, because it doesn't really hammer home on that point of, oh, we're being overregulated and that's a problem. Or it seems to tilt a little bit in that way. But again, I think it's because it's from the perspective of G. Craig Morrison, right, who feels that way because he's 87 years old trying to build a house and harvest strawberries and do things the way that he was doing it in, you know, the early 1900s in rural Canada.
Yeah,
when he remembers having a horse and cart when he is that guy. Yes, and we're seeing the film from his perspective.
Correct. And mm-hmm. Even at one point his son says to him, then this is like the call out for his worldview.
Uh-huh.
Because he said, you're feeling sick, son. He said, well, I've got walking pneumonia. He said, where I come from, if you're walking, it's not pneumonia. And he said, oh, if only we could rely on the strength of character, then we wouldn't need national health, right?
Yes, yeah.
And it's kind of what the son's calling him out, mm-hmm. saying, you think that if everyone was just like you, everything would be okay.
Exactly.
And so the movie's really subtle in kind of that point, because even later on, and so we're getting into the movie already, but when Chester suddenly dies,
mm-hmm.
you know, he's of that generation where you just, you know, buck up and you make it happen and you know, and you don't need somebody regulating, and all of a sudden he's dead,
mm-hmm.
you know? So he must have been weak of character, otherwise he wouldn't have died.
Right.
Because even when they're in the truck talking and she said, I thought when I got to this age, I would have figured out dying. And I no closer than when I was 10. Do you think about it? And he said, nope, I plan on beating the odds.
Right.
And so he's like, I'm not going to die.
Yeah.
Which...
yeah, he's not dealing with his own, or even dealing with her illness as
correct.
Well. Like
correct.
When he's just going to make these little concessions for a long time until he doesn't. And we can talk about that, right? Mm-hmm. Until he actually accepts that things have to change. But he's going to make all these like little adjustments in order to hold on to things. You know, we're going to have the porta potty on the front porch and we're going to sleep in the living room. Instead of thinking about what does this mean and what do we actually need to do, even though his kids are pushing him on that.
No, it's a really very good point, because in some ways, if you look at it from the, you know, and it, again, it always is this thing when we talk that you enlighten me on different parts of the movie, right?
Uh-huh.
That, you know, I really came around on the last couple of movies, Rebel Without a Cause and Last Picture Show, in our conversation. And even as you're saying that, I'm thinking, you know, so at one point she starts the oven mitt on fire. And so his response is to hide all the matches. And so in that respect, he becomes the regulatory body.
Hmm.
Because he's regulating her access to matches.
Right.
Or he puts the gate up so she can't go up and down the stairs. So now he's regulated again. And so he becomes this regulatory body that he so despises.
Right.
You know, and so Dr. No Nonsense would say, this is the one that shall not be named. You know, you dislike in others what you so dislike in yourself. You know, and so he just so much dislikes the regulations that are coming down. The refrigerated truck, the building inspections, the stamped lumber, the plans, etc. And yet he's doing it to his wife.
And in a lot of ways, because he's kind of that traditional head of the house, seven children, father figure, he does that to everybody. And, you know, he shuts down his daughter, his dad, do you want to do this? No. You know, do you want to talk about this? No. I will talk about it when I'm ready to talk about it. Yeah, he's the regulator in his whole family. Absolutely, I agree with his wife. And in his whole family, because he's the father, he's the head of the household, he's going to make the decisions. And it's not a, let's all sit around and talk, right? You have to have the emissary from the seven siblings come and talk to dad to put forward their ideas, and then he's just gonna say, no, we're not doing that.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is exactly
yeah.
what
so
happens
it is
to
that
him.
He's yeah.
He goes to the regulatory body with mm-hmm. his emissary, that mm-hmm. his lawyer, and he's shut
and
down.
No,
do you realize the seriousness of this?
Yeah.
This is basically what he says to his kids.
Yeah.
You
exactly.
Know, no,
and he
do you realize
yeah.
And
yeah.
I hadn't realized that until just now that
yeah, me neither. this is why we have the conversation.
This is why we're
bodhisattvas. Yes, exactly. Exactly. We haven't, yeah, so we've kind of gotten a little bit into the movie
itself. The description
itself.
Of the movie is just exactly what happens.
It is what happens, yeah.
And so the rest is just all details. The people that are around him, his friends, his children, the lawyer, the building inspector, as he's trying to deal with his wife's dementia, and he's fighting against the system that wants it to go a certain way, and he doesn't want it to go that
mm-hmm.
way. That's
mm-hmm.
the whole. That's the whole
it
of the
really
movie.
Really, is the whole movie.
And then lots yeah. of pastoral scenes with orchestral music, right?
Yes,
quite lovely. You know,
it really, yeah, it is. It is quite lovely that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the reason that I also brought up that building inspector initially was because I feel like so with so many of the characters, you know, we were talking about him and how he kind of has this, you know, he has a certain amount of power when he's running his family, but then faced with this like bureaucracy, he doesn't have the power, and it's the negotiation of that, right? And you can see the ways that he's really sympathetic in what he's trying to do, but you can also see, you know, in the ways that he's not so sympathetic when, you know, he doesn't quite know how to deal with his wife's dementia, and she sets an oven mitt on fire, and he's like, ah, oh, God damn it, you know, and he gets like impatient and angry about those things. He's not like a perfect, you know, that I think that there's a lot of really nice subtleties in the characters themselves too, which is why I brought up the building inspector, because he's the one that we don't have those kind of subtleties around. You know, you can see how his oldest daughter is all Ruth, right? Ruth is very much the oldest daughter, and she's so serious and humorless, and she's, you know, trying to push through the things. She's ready to like make things happen the way she thinks that they should happen. And but at the same time, she's also a very sympathetic character who really, you know, she has these, she really does want what's best for them, and she wants to take care of them, and she wants, you know, to make things as good as possible for them and to deal with what's happening. And, you know, the lawyer, you know, everybody gets kind of these shades to them. And I think that that was kind of another lovely thing about it. You know, even his friend who's just like nosy and tells him everything, but, you know, and is just like, could be super frustrating to be around some of the time, but, you know, they've been friends forever. And he's the one that calls the newspaper, which probably helps him quite a bit in his whole quest to be able to make, to build the house and everything. So, you know, I think the film really strives to have this sense of these are all just real people. You know, it's based on a real story. So we're grounding it all in like very much like real people. None of it is hyperbolic or idealized, or, you know, no one is an archetype. Everyone is these like very specific, grounded, real people. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you contrast this to The Notebook.
Yes.
Right, where he's just so loving.
Exactly.
And he just goes every day and reads the whole notebook again to her, and then comes back the next day and she's forgotten everything. And he just does it again because he loves her. And here he gets mad at her.
Yeah.
He's unkind to her, and he's all kinds of things. And then he is kind to her.
He is.
You know, it's a complicated relationship he has.
And then because then afterwards he was like, I was so mad at her. And, you know, and he's beating himself up about making one tiny mistake.
And so it is a great portrayal of, you know, his deep love for her and his great frustration with her. You know,
yeah.
Which they're both true. that it isn't just, oh, I just love her unconditionally.
Yeah.
There are conditions.
Yeah.
But he still loves her.
He does. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's a beautiful movie. I mean, when, you know, they're struggling, both of them are just kind of twisting their wedding rings. Mm-hmm. They're just sitting there looking at their old hands, mm-hmm. twisting their beat up wedding rings and thinking, you know. They don't say anything.
And yeah, there's never a big speech about like, this is what it means to, you know, live together for 61 years. And there's no big kind of round out speech. He just cries at the funeral.
Chester's.
Oh, Chester. Yeah, Chester's funeral.
So I was telling Dr. No Nonsense about this mm-hmm. because in terms of liminal space movies, this is perhaps my favorite.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, it's not going to have favorite? The highest rating again because, you know, it is that thing that you couldn't watch this a lot. Like, I could watch all the boys I loved before.
We could go like watch it right now.
Yeah, we could watch it on a daily basis.
Yeah.
This one, it's really beautiful, but you probably couldn't watch it daily.
No.
I could watch it every couple years. Like, I saw it a couple years ago and I watched it this time and, oh, man, I almost started crying in it. It's so beautiful. And it's probably my favorite line or like monologue, soliloquy, whatever we're going to call it, right? When he's talking about the kitchen table.
Mm-hmm.
And he's talking about making their kitchen table. And so he makes their kitchen table with his father and they go cut the tree and they mill the lumber and they dry the wood. And then he makes this beautiful table for him and his wife and his 7 kids. And he puts 12 layers of shellac on it. And then Ruthie spills her ink on it and stains it.
Yeah.
And he said,
and some kid writes his homework. So you've got like 6th grade math written into the table.
That's
yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. The ghost of handwriting is something mm-hmm. like that, he says, because it leaves the imprint in the finish. And he said, when I first made the table, everything that happened to the table was an insult to me, it was an offense to me.
Mm hmm.
And it hurt me because I worked hard for that table.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I would have made it out of oak. Oak is harder.
Mm-hmm.
But as time went by, I was glad that I made it out of pine because all those things that happened to it made it the table that it was. Mm-hmm. And the pine held the memories, whereas the oak would not.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was this beautiful, beautiful metaphor or analogy or whatever, right? Because it's kind of what he's talking about with his wife. Because
mm-hmm.
now she has all these imperfections. He could have married Barbara Bouchel or whatever.
Yeah.
The other woman. I can't remember her name.
See, we've already forgotten her name.
Yeah. But he could have married her, the oak, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't. Right? He married Irene. And then she has all these imperfections. But those imperfections carry the memories. Mm-hmm. And they also make her who she is. And so as you go along and, you know, because they're in this liminal space, but all the other imperfections were liminal spaces as well, right? And it's basically what he's saying. Every time we went from one thing to another, we were somehow changed. You know, there was an imprint of the writing, the ghost of the writing, or there was a scratch from a fork or whatever. And at first, those seemed to be offenses to us, but then they became who we were. And they made us the beautiful thing that we are. And so he loves his kitchen table now because it has these imperfections that are the memories of his family. And it's the same as he's now 87 years old. He can see all the imperfections and scars and wounds and offenses that have made him who he is or made her who she is. And basically he's saying her dementia is who she is, and it makes him love her even more because it's her imperfection. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, oh my God, it's just so beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it is this liminal space movie about someone who's very old, right? And I think that, yeah, I think you're exactly right. And I think it's like what like life is too, right? It is his relationship with his wife. It is like his relationship with his table that he's built, right? And it's also like what happens with life is that you have these like experiences that might hurt, or you might like, you know, there's lots of times where you say, oh, you know, would you take things back? Like, would you redo things? Would you change things? And I feel like most people would say no, because those things make you who you are, right? It is, even if those experiences are painful or hurtful or embarrassing, or, you know, you have regret about them, you have regret about those things. So then you might do things differently in the future because you've made those mistakes or because you've done those things, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think it is kind of, instead of, you know, these liminal space movies that we see that are about like young people who are just like start like make a few like tiny mistakes, or they're like experiencing those kind of things like for the first time, of like this really big hurt or this like pain or this, you know, embarrassment or regret or any of those things, and it's so magnified because it's the first time that's happened. He's got this whole history of that table that is like, that is so scarred and so has so many things on it, and so he's able to see like this broader way that those things have done that in a way that maybe like those younger people don't. Or like if we were going to go back to The Notebook, right, that doesn't allow for those things to be there. It has to be a perfect pine table, because like it just, you know, you can't have those things because it has to be flawless in what it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even in the beginning, they go to a funeral, somebody else's we don't know, and they're at a funeral and he's filling the pews in front of him, and so you see his fingers caressing the woods and she grabs his hand, you know, so he's filling kind of the history of the pew, you know, so you see it right away that he's reading kind of the imperfections of the pews and what that means in terms of what the memory of that pew is. And then it goes, you know, then we have this baseball thing that supposedly is this memory. And I'm not even sure, because he even said, the thing that I love about baseball is you can compare one player across generations to another. And then I was like, are they also then going to the part where, you know, holding on to something because it has a memory is more valuable than the money you could get for it?
Yeah, because he doesn't sell the baseball,
and he's thought about it several times, and then there's this like he could sell it for a lot of money, which would help him. Yeah, have his house built, but he doesn't.
He read Marie Kondo.
Yeah.
He held that baseball in his hands on the porch and he said, does this bring me joy? And he said, it brings me more joy to have this than the money would. And so he kept the baseball.
Yeah, he sleeps better knowing it's in the flower tin.
Yeah, because he Marie Kondo'd. Yeah. He Marie Kondo'd that whole house, because they got rid of a lot of stuff in that house built for nine versus that tiny house built for two. They had to do some serious Marie Kondoing.
They probably did.
I bet she was very good at it.
I bet you.
Because she doesn't have like crazy attachments. So she's like, what did I use this for?
Does this
bring me joy right now? No, get rid of it, right?
There's a picture of nine people. Who are these people?
Get rid of it. And he's like, God damn it, I gotta go out there and pick up all the stuff that she's throwing away.
Jesus Christ, Irene. That's what he would always say. Jesus
Christ. Got to bring back some of that nonsense.
His attachment to wood and the memory of things,
yeah,
that exists in their imperfections,
uh-huh,
I think was just beautiful.
Yeah.
And not heavy-handed in how they were saying, this is him talking about his wife here. And so I think it was just really beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely. And I thought, he was great in it. Mm-hmm. And I thought she was great too. So I was reading up a little bit, and someone described her as like bird-like and alert. And she really was. She's like a little bird the whole time. And partially because she's forgetting things. And so she's kind of like, you know, discovering things anew, like every day, or like coming back around to things. And she would just look like kind of surprised. And she had this little, like, she's just like so like cute and alert and just like kind of trying to like figure her way through things all the time. And he's just like carrying all the weight of all of the things in his like, he's like 6'7" or something like that. Yeah. And so he's just this like looming over her, and she's this like tiny little bird just climbing around. So they were great together in it as well.
So you have some facts about this movie?
There's not a ton. ton of facts, but this was based on a true story. And so, you know, at the end of the movie, they talk about, you know, he died at 93. But one of the things that I did find out from these nice Canadian nice Canadian newspaper articles is that Craig Morrison was his real name. And he built the house when he was 88, and he continued working on it. Even past, I think, the time that the movie ends, he continues working on it, because he actually worked on it until he was 92, and they kept coming at him with more things, I think. And so I think they changed the name of the inspector. I wouldn't be surprised. They didn't change the name of the reporter or his name, but I'm thinking they changed the name of the inspector. And so he even had, again, like you were saying, like he had another like professional home builder come in and sign off on everything that he did, saying he did it the old way. And he said, this is the way we built things in the 60s. It's just not the way we build things now, but I'm signing off on everything that he did. And so he actually worked on the house until he was 92. And then he actually died at the age of 93, and his wife survived him. Yeah. So as far as I know, I mean, this was in like 2013, I'm assuming. This was 6 years ago. But yeah, she actually survived him, and he died in the house that he built at the age of 93. So he kept building on the house till he was 92, and they kept coming at him, I think, with even more of these building code violations, and he kept just, I mean, the fight continued, basically, I think, until they finally let up when he was 92. But I do want to ask you a question of who is this movie for? Because I read a couple of reviews. There aren't a ton of reviews, but I did read a couple of reviews. One from Roger Ebert's website. Roger Ebert himself had passed away when the review was written. And then one from what seems to be a Christian reviewer, because the Christian reviewer really took issue with the sex scene between the two people, because they said it's just so unnecessary to have that much nudity in the movie. I don't know what they thought about the part where he goes into the bathhouse when we see his butt in the beginning of the movie, but she does, and it's they liked the part about freedoms being curtailed by regulation. They really read a lot farther into that one, and it said they did fast forward when these people, this Christian reviewer, watched the movie. They did fast forward through the scene where they might be headed towards nudity. They said it was gratuitous and unnecessary, and so they said you should have clear play. And I was like, well, what's clear play? Have you heard of clear play?
I have not, but I'm guessing I know what it is.
Do you want to take a guess as to what clear play is?
I'm guessing that you feed a movie into clear play and it cuts out the parts that have nudity or cussing.
Yes, that is exactly what ClearPlay is. It is a plugin that you can install that will, yes. So you don't, it's a plugin that will read the movie that you're watching and skip past the parts that might involve nudity and language. Well, I don't know if it does language. I think it mostly just gets rid of nudity.
Because I was thinking it must cut out every time he goes, Jesus, yeah. Chester.
When I looked into it, I'm pretty sure it mostly just involves cutting out nudity, because I don't think that they can, I don't know if it can read for language or not. But yeah, so they said, if you have clear play, you'll be in luck, because you won't need to see the gratuitous nudity that we're headed towards some nudity. Uh-oh. So.
We really weren't. We saw her back.
Yeah.
And his chest.
And I thought that it was actually a really nice part of the movie, because it was that these two people still love each other and have passion for each other after 61 years together. And I thought it was really nice that it wasn't like, oh, because they're older people, we have to completely desexualize them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they even talk about the part where he almost slept with somebody else. And yeah. And then she's like, I would have left you so fast.
I still would.
Yeah. And you get this real what? Sense of, yeah, you get such
I
a great.
I still would leave you. Oh. Jesus, Irene.
And you get this great sense of their relationship and like, and her as a person, because it's a little, you know, we're seeing it so much through him.
Correct.
And so you get maybe before, you know, you still have a good sense of her as a person, but, you know, you start to lose that a little bit more as she starts to get more and more confused and to forget more and more. But you get this sense of what a strong lady she was.
Yeah,
and I love
absolutely.
That. So it's just, so anyway, I wanted to let you know, Christian review of it.
What does Ebert's site say about it?
And then this comes to my question about you that I wanted to talk about, because then it says, They talk about it's, you know, they really liked the movie, and they said it's a welcome respite as a summer movie that's not about things blowing up and robots and things like that, that it's especially nice coming out during the time that we get a lot of movies that are about talking robots and explosions and insanity, and so that it's especially nice that it's just this really beautiful movie, and that it's not kind of anguish, you know, it's not built around like trauma of aging, it's built around something that's a lot like sweeter and more contemplative than, you know, I think there's a lot of other movies that have come out too that are about this like very, very traumatic aging and death movies. One of the things that he said is that Still Mine will perhaps resonate most with seniors, whom Hollywood generally ignores, but who loyally support films that feature their peers in supporting roles and tell relatable stories. And he compares it to the best exotic Marigold Hotel. And he said, it is not the silly romp that movie is, but he says it's more thoughtful and deliberate in talking about the pride and perils of aging. And so he's in a story that recalls the classic Copper-esque battle of wills between an ordinary principled man versus the system. So the reviewer really enjoyed it. And I think that they said, you know, there's a little bit of the writing is not incredibly strong. There's a little bit of triteness in some of the writing, you know, saying, oh, age is just a number and things like that. But that they really enjoyed it, especially as compared to movies that are trying to wrench tears and trauma out of aging and out of these kind of scenarios, and that it's this quiet contemplative movie that really lets you sit with those characters. But my question about it is, if the movie reviews that come out that I have found the top reviews are both from Christian websites or from saying seniors will especially appreciate this movie, who do you think that this movie is for? Who do you think that that's either that's it's targeted at, or who do you think that this movie would most resonate with?
That's a great question, because I think the movie is targeted at seniors, mm-hmm. because they would say, I get to see my peers and this is something that I can relate to. Mm-hmm. When we went to the dinner the other night, we went to a fundraiser, Dr. No Nonsense and I, for a local low income senior community. And when we were there, we were talking to one of the people at our table who's an elder adult, not our guest for next episode.
Teaser.
We're going to have a guest. And so we will have, I think we're going with the trail name, 5-Day Banana. So we'll have 5-Day Banana joining us.
So you were at a table with 5-Day Banana and another elder.
And this was 5-Day Banana's friend. Mm-hmm. And so we're talking to 5-Day Banana's friend and saying, you know, don't you think we should have like multi-generational living situations? And she said, I really appreciate living with a bunch of people my own age. Hmm. And we said, why? And she said, because until you get to that point, you don't understand it. And so a lot of times, you know, when somebody will pass, we grieve for them, but there's also a black humor that exists. Hmm. And we enjoy the black humor quite a bit. The younger people do not, right? And yeah. So I was like, huh, because I hadn't thought about that they would really appreciate that they had this shared kind of place in the world, and that it was theirs alone and nobody else could appreciate it. And it is kind of the thing we talked about earlier when you said, you know, young people who are suffering their first setback or their first embarrassment, it's a huge thing. But then older people are like, oh, that's happened to me 30, 40 mm-hmm. times. So it's another imperfection in the table, right?
Yeah. Oh, that first ink spill, though. Whew.
Yeah, that first ink spill is awful. Just brutal. And so for her to say that, I was like, wow, that is interesting, because you know, a lot of times we think, why, we're just warehousing older adults together. And for her, she was like, no, I like being with them, because mm-hmm. we have a shared experience mm-hmm. and we are at a shared stage of life that only we can appreciate, which was kind of interesting. So I get that this movie might have been targeted for that audience, so that would be the general or the greatest generating revenue stream was from people of that age group. But that being said, having both my parents kind of be in that stage, I identified with the children who were wrestling with what is their role in their parents' aging. And so I was deeply moved. I cried a couple of times. I don't know if you saw me crying.
No.
I was crying during this movie a couple of times. It was beautiful. I've seen it before, and I cried again at it because it's just really tremendous. Because it is like the daughter who's saying, we can get assistance. I've looked into places. And the father is just completely dismissive of her.
Mm-hmm.
But she's not doing it because she's mean and manipulative and domineering. She's trying to care for her mother and her parents, both of them, right? She's like, "Go, Dad, you're cooking now?" You know, she's realizing that's not going to be a good thing,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And even the son saying, "Okay, if you're going to build that house, don't get hurt." And the dad's like, "Oh, what's it like to be afraid of your shadow?" But he's just trying to take care, because the fact is,
yeah.
You know, you fall off a ladder when you're 87. It's much worse than when you fall off a ladder and you're 25.
Or we know people who, you know, are unwilling to give up driving.
Correct.
Even if they really should be, because they've been driving for 70 years. Why should they stop driving now? Even if they are, you know, you may be a danger to yourself and others.
That's correct.
Yes. I'm talking about the man that bumped you when we were at a complete standstill.
Yeah, your second accident of the day.
Yes. That's who I'm referring to.
Correct.
We were sitting at a red light and someone bumped us.
Yeah.
Yes. Which, if you're hitting somebody from a standstill, not a good thing. So
it's not.
And that was the least that could have happened.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah. So you can see for him, he's like, well, I've been building houses my whole life. Why should I stop? And the son sees his 87-year-old father, who is a lot more brittle than he used to be, but maybe cannot recognize that.
That's
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And so you're seeing yourself in those, saying, how do you tell your parent not to do those things that they've been doing? Because it's hard to recognize. Who wants to recognize, I need to step back from these things that I've been doing for so long and that was so good at, too. I'm so accomplished at these things, like, to voluntarily step back from so many of those things.
Right. And it's one of the things I liked about this movie a lot, because, again, if we look at the movies that are based on this kind of scenario,
mm-hmm.
where the children think they know what's better for the parents and the parents think they know what's better for themselves, that there's this conflict between the parents and the children.
Mm-hmm.
And it's resolved one way or another, right? That the children went and put them in a home, and then we see this miserable life that this person has in a home. Or the parents, you know, don't succumb, and then they have this most wonderful Marigold Hotel experience, right? You know what I'm saying?
I think I've deliberately forgotten 90% of what happened in that movie.
Oh, I absolutely hated that movie. That is the KB of elder movies.
We should have watched this as part of the trilogy. We should have watched this part of the trilogy.
Because, oh, it is. I would give it.
It would have been the KBs of. Yeah, it's the KB of elder movies.
It is absolutely the KB of elder movies for me. I hate it.
We should have just
much.
Not even watched that one. Watched the sequel.
I hate that much. Oh,
because you can only imagine the sequel is just exponentially worse.
Yeah.
So anyway,
and so I actually think that if
because then they live a consequence-free everybody. Oh, it's so funny to see, you know, older people doing these things.
Correct.
Yeah, that the humor comes from watching people do these things, or from, you know, having like consequence-free. I don't know that they're
that
just
they've kind of dismiss their children's concerns,
mm-hmm.
move to a foreign country, and then are living their best life ever,
mm-hmm.
which I think is a fantasy,
mm-hmm.
which creates unrealistic expectations, mm-hmm. and that's why I hate it so
mm-hmm.
much,
mm-hmm.
because my guess is that living in a foreign country, and you can speak to this more than me, is way harder than
really
people
think.
It's really hard, right?
Yeah.
And it's not going to be like.
Yeah. And then also that one in particular, because then you're thinking, oh, it's really hard. But what if you live in like a beautiful hotel where you have a bunch of your British people in India, especially? Then there's all this weird race and class and colonialist things to it, because then you get served by the people that your country once, you know, presided over. And so you're kind of recreating in some ways that. So then it's like on top of that, it's that then the reason that you can live your best life ever is because, again, you're living out this kind of colonial fantasy of Indian people taking care of all your whims and making sure that your life is great there, Oof, yeah, that's
horrible. It's horrible. Hated the movie. Hated
it. We might need to switch our third movie.
It was not a romp. It was a hate fest.
We're watching the sequel to the second best Exotic Marigold Hotel.
Oh my god.
I think we have to switch.
Listener suggestions. Do not.
We're not doing that as our listener suggestion. I am suggesting we do that as our third movie in the trilogy.
Reader suggestions. Oh my god.
I think that would be super funny. Gotta do another hate watch. It's time to come around. After we just slogged through Splendor in the Grass. We saw this beautiful movie.
Why do you want to bring back the dogs? This is a beautiful movie. So I think that if people that have parents of that age knew what this movie, because I think it is kind of a nuanced portrayal of their relationship between the daughter and the father and the son and the father. And there's not a whole lot of them interacting with the mother.
Mm-hmm.
So it's mostly with the father.
Yeah.
And that's why I like how you defended the scene where their sex scene, you know, because it gives you a sense of who she is.
Yeah.
And then kind of her journey and what she's losing, the imperfections of the table that are occurring.
Yeah.
And otherwise it would just be this, we don't know who she is. And now she's this shell of a woman that he somehow is going to stand by. But you do get the sense of she was strong and forceful and she was his equal in many ways, which I think is important to the story of the movie and of their relationship. Of why, you know, and again, back to the scene where they're both looking at their wedding rings. You know, they were both committed to this.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you get to 61 years, right? You both have to be committed. But I would say that the movie, for monetary reasons, was geared towards older adults. But from a perspective of the dilemma, it was geared towards older adults and children of older adults. So yeah. I would say it's not a teen movie.
It is not.
No.
No. Yeah. And I think it's really interesting. We should wrap it up, talk about Star by Far, talk about our best lines too. But I do think it's really interesting, and I am highly anticipating having our guests on our podcast next week, because it'll expand our generational range that we have here, because we do have, you know, a multi-generational podcast here. And I think it's been interesting to see kind of the ways that we do see some of these movies differently. And so I think we saw, you know, it is a movie that in many ways appeals more to you too. It's not a teen movie, but it's also not a movie that, like, I haven't had a lot of those experiences. And so I also thought it was a very beautiful movie and a very moving movie, and I really liked it, but I don't think that I quite loved it or identified with it to the level that you did, which again, I think also, like, not to bring it into this broader thing, but, you know, it's people always, like, constantly say now is, like, representation matters. And I think that, like, this is another example of that, where it doesn't just have to just only be kind of along these lines of, like, you know, race or gender or something like that, but too, like, this is a movie that you identified with and understood and empathized with, I think, on a level that I didn't because of age too. And so to have, again, I'm going to defend that sex scene, or to defend a lot of this movie, like, I liked it, but I don't think I loved it like you did, because of that divide between our experiences too. So, and that's why that representation matters, you know. And so it doesn't matter that much that, like, I didn't love it as much as you did, because it wasn't a movie made for me to show me. And that's fine. So
the fundraiser we went to at the senior community, it is one of the things they're up to, changing the conversation around aging and addressing ageism. And so hopefully I have not misspoke in my language, but it is interesting how we speak about people that are aging or older adults. And so, like, next episode when we have 5 Day Banana on, she does not want to be called old. It's offensive to her. And so, you know, it's interesting because, like, for me, I just didn't know that until I was with that community for a little while. And so it is representation in terms of all these different things beside that.
Absolutely.
On that, I'm going to go right to what I watched before, because it goes up this line, because what I watched before was Beyond Beyonce's Homecoming.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's the same thing that you're talking about, because I liked the movie,
yeah,
but I didn't love it.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I watch it, you know, people are fainting in the audience because they're near Beyonce, right? And somebody has the day before gone to see her, and then the next day showed up wearing the same thing that she's wearing. So overnight they made her costume. Yeah. I was like,
well, they had a week. There was a week between performing. It was one weekend and another weekend.
Oh, okay.
They had a week to make that outfit.
Okay, they had a week
still to, insane, but they had a week to make
insane.
It.
Still insane. They made, yeah, took a bunch of pictures of it, and then they went and replicated it, and then they wore it to the next concert. I was like, that's crazy. That's people that are into that, right?
Yeah. Or you guys are watching, and then, you know, she brings out Jay-Z, she brings out Solange, she brings out Destiny's Child, and you guys are like, who are these people? And I'm very excited, and everyone in the audience is screaming and fainting, and you're like, I don't know who these women
are.
Well,
no, I kind of did. No.
Okay, well, Dr. No Nonsense had no idea who they were.
But I didn't. Yeah. You know, generally know who they were.
Yeah.
I couldn't name a single, you know.
You were not singing along with everybody.
I was not singing along. Not a single bit, right? Yeah. I did dance, though, later.
He's really getting into Beyonce-style dancing.
Uh-huh,
having a hard time with the hair flips.
Well, I'm also having a hard time with rubber arms, too.
Yes. Yes. You had a hard time watching rubber arms, dislocating those shoulders.
Oh,
yeah.
I think he's double jointed.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah. But so I watched it, and it's kind of the same thing, mm-hmm, that I watched it, great admiration for her talent and her drive. Love the band and the dancers, and, you know,
shout out to that top tuba.
Yeah, number two tuba on the left side. Shout out to you,
yep,
Corbin Jones.
Yep. Yes, the star of Beyonce's Homecoming.
Correct. But, you know, so, you know, all that, very likable movie. I would never watch it again. Was not like fawning over it, was not singing along, posting Facebook things of me dancing with her. None of that stuff was happening. But I think it's important for that movie to be made.
Mm-hmm. And you can see, like, why, yeah, and there was so much thought into that exact, why she did exactly what she did by making it a homecoming, by making it all these references, and even to things that, like, you might not see, like, when she sings, like, the Black National Anthem at the beginning, right? The people there are like, wow, that is, I'm so happy that, like, she is so deliberately bringing that to, like, this, also bringing it to this very white space, right? Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. Mm-hmm, yeah. And I think that, yeah, because people are just so up in arms about some of those things now of like, oh, why do we have to take these things away in order to have these other things? And I think that there's so much to be said about those things that not everything has to be just for you.
Yes.
And you can still appreciate it and understand it and respect it.
And support it.
Yeah. And we're going to watch it and be some of the streams, yep, of it and say, we support this and watched it and liked it. But some of those, you know, it's not going to be as important to you, but you can still support it. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And that's how I feel about Still Mine, too.
So that's what I watched before. And I'm just going to go through all the segments, you know.
Okay, go for it.
My best line. Mr. Morrison, open up your wallet. Introduce those moths to the 21st century.
Yes. When he doesn't want to spend any money on the plans or any of the other things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is spoken by my star by far.
Oh,
the lawyer.
The lawyer.
The lawyer's my star.
And his mustache.
Mm-hmm. And because he says to him, I haven't, the main character says, I haven't gotten a bill from you. And he said, I don't think I've done right by you. I've given you bad advice all along. I just loved him because he really supported him. He was trying to do what's best for him. And when he realized what he had been doing was not helpful, he took responsibility for, I was supposed to have done this for you and I didn't. So I will own that. And I like that because it was an example to him, rather than lecturing him about this is how you be in the world. He was kind of showing the older guy, you take responsibility for what you've done. Because then I think later he goes and apologizes to the building inspector and says, I'm sorry, we got off on the wrong foot. In reflecting on his relationship with the lawyer, he then says, well, I have to take responsibility for what I did in this situation. I can't say it's his fault because he's an asshole.
Yeah.
I have to go and say, okay, maybe we didn't start off right. So let me just try again. And then I'm going to go lastly to my rating. I rated this 79,387.
All right.
I was really moved by this movie again. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think my favorite line of... I have a couple of favorite lines, but one of my favorite lines is from Ruth, who comes into the house, and I think she thinks about appearances a lot because she's mad that they use the freezers as planters, and then she comes into the house and she goes, "Is that the porta potty from Linda's wedding?" One of my favorite lines. And then my other one is just based on the delivery of the line, which was, "You're getting a casserole." And it was the most aggressive way anyone's ever offered a casserole in the history of film and possibly life, which came from my star by far's wife. Like the lawyer, Chester was there. He was an annoying know-it-all who just drove away in his tractor when his friend needed a hand. But he also stepped up in the way that he knew how to step up to support his friend, which was to turn his badgering know-it-allness into badgering know-it-allness at the reporter, who then made some things happen. I wish that we had, you know, they kind of parted in a little bit of annoyance and anger, which I think was a little bit of their relationship. And I think part of the reason that he was crying at the funeral, because he didn't have an opportunity to thank Chester for what he had done in the way that he could rectify the situation as much as his conscience needed with, like, the building inspector based on what the lawyer had said. So he didn't get to have that kind of catharsis with Chester to talk about the relationship that they had or to thank him for what he'd done for him. So, and I would say, so I rated this movie... $44,678. So I liked this movie a lot. I thought it was very beautiful. I thought it was very moving. I liked it quite a bit, but I did not love it in the same way that you did. So I still think it was a very good movie, but there were a couple things that didn't hang together. And I did not love it quite as much. I probably wouldn't revisit this very often, but, you know, maybe in 50 years I'll watch it all the time. So I think that's it for today.
No watch before.
So actually what I watched before was Avengers Endgame. So I think that it actually did color my watching of this movie, because Avengers Endgame was the polar opposite of this movie, where it was all explosions. But it was I really enjoyed it. But it was very much different. So this was very nice, coming from something where everything is exploding and everyone is doing all kinds of crazy superhuman things, to watch a movie that is very human. Was really nice.
Okay.
So I think it actually made me appreciate a lot of the quietness and humanness of the movie.
All right. Speaking of quiet humanness, shout out to Tony's Chocolonely.
Ah, we love you, Tony. Every time.
Yeah, every time. You're a future sponsor.
Yeah.
And quiet humanness, Kevin MacLeod.
Ah,
crushing
Kevin.
It.
Always crushing it, Kevin.
Thank you for the music, Kevin. So this concludes our 19th episode.
And what are we watching for number 20?
Cocoon.
Oh, continuing with our Elder trilogy.
Yep. And it may be 21 becomes something different. You're pushing for the most expensive, obnoxious Marigold Hotel.
Yes, I think that's the name.
Something like that.
So, but next episode, we're going to be watching Cocoon. So,
and we'll have a guest.
We will have a guest.
5 Day Banana will be with us.
Yeah. Just a little sneak preview. We will have a guest next episode. We're very excited.
Yeah. So, as always.
Yeah. Thanks for talking nonsense.